Tonight, station WAAB and the affiliated stations of the Colonial Network present the fifth in a series of programs whose general theme is good citizenship. These programs will bring to the radio audience representatives of all the well-known fraternal and social organizations with messages of importance in these troubled times. You will not wish to miss any of these interesting programs. Tonight, to the Grand Lodge of Masons, goes the honor of presenting the fifth in this series. The speakers on this good citizenship program will be Joseph Earl Perry, Grand Master of Masons of Massachusetts, and Dr. Frederick Hamilton, former president of Tufts College, now Grand Secretary of the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. First, Dr. Hamilton.
By way of introduction to what the Grand Master will presently say, let me take a glance at the Masonic fraternity as the non-Mason may see it. Masonry is the oldest, largest, and most widely diffused of all fraternal organizations. While its ancestry, much of it clearly traceable, goes far back into the dim past, in its present organized form, it came into existence in England in 1717. Four London lodges met and organized the Grand Lodge. The movement was successful in giving a central organization and authority to the masonry which had long existed in a formless and uncontrolled condition. As soon as it felt strong enough to do so, the Grand Lodge ordained that no lodge should be considered regular unless it had a charter or a warrant from a Grand Lodge or a Grand Master. And no Mason should be recognized as such unless he was initiated in such a lodge. This was soon generally accepted and has been the law of the fraternity ever since. Masonry rapidly spread to the continent of Europe and wherever British soldiers, sailors, and traders were to be found. Regular Masonry came to America in 1733 when a warrant as provincial Grand Master was given by the Grand Master of England to Henry Price of Boston. Freemasonry spread rapidly through the American colonies. An eminent authority has pointed out that during the colonial period, when the colonies were divided in spirit and almost hostile to each other, Freemasonry was the one unifying element common to all, and thus played a great part in making the revolution possible. After the Revolution, each state organized a Grand Lodge. As new states were formed beyond the original 13, the same process took place. There are now, in the United States, 49 Grand Lodges, one in each state and one in the District of Columbia. Same process has gone on all over the world. Lodges are planted here and there. When they are strong enough, they organize a Grand Lodge for the state or country in which they are located. Every Grand Lodge is absolutely sovereign and independent of any and every other Grand Lodge. They all accept certain general principles known as the ancient landmarks. Their varying codes of Masonic law are all based on certain fundamental principles laid down in the book known as the Anderson Constitutions, prepared by James Anderson and accepted by the Grand Lodge of England in 1723. They all require an unequivocal declaration of belief in a supreme being from every applicant for membership. They all teach the same system of morals. Spiritually, the Grand Lodges are one the world over. Materially, They are many, each independent of all others. Every year, the Grand Masters of the United States meet in Washington for conference. This conference never votes or resolves. It has no more authority than the conferences of governors or mayors or police chiefs, which are held from time to time. It cannot be too strongly asserted that there is not, never has been, and never can be, any group or any individual ruling and directing world's Freemasonry. There has long been a myth that there are such invisible chiefs, of whom the common Mason knows nothing. It is a myth, pure and simple. Freemasonry is pure democracy. Very possibly that is why some persons do not like it. definite statistics are not available. But there are at least 4 million Masons in the world. There are about 2.5 million in the United States. Grand Lodge of England has about 400,000 members in slightly more than 5,000 lodges. Lodges are much smaller elsewhere than in the United States. Scotland has over 1,200 lodges. Ireland has over 700, scattered all over the island and overseas. There are grand lodges in each Canadian province, in Central and South America, in Australia, in Asia, and in Africa. On the continent of Europe, Freemasonry is strong, though not very numerous, in the Scandinavian countries, in Switzerland, and in Holland. In three great countries, it has been suppressed by the government. In some others, it is frowned upon by the government. In France, there is a numerous Freemasonry, but it lacks general recognition because it has departed from the requirement that every applicant must profess belief in a supreme being. All Freemasonry is based on the Lodge. From the Lodge, one may go on and join other Masonic groups. Freemasonry officially recognizes as Masonic bodies chapters of Royal Arch Masons, councils of Royal and Select Masters, commanderies of Knights Templar, and the several bodies of the Scottish Rite with its elaborate system of 33 degrees. These are sometimes called higher degrees. They are higher only in the sense that they have higher numbers and that some of them are prerequisites to be taken by others. The man who has received the 3 degrees in the Lodge is a master mason. There is nothing higher and nothing superior to him in masonry. There are certain other organizations, the best known of which are perhaps the Shrine and the Grotto, which are not clearly understood by the general public. They are not Masonic organizations. They are organizations of Masons. That is to say, they draw their membership from the Masonic fraternity, but they are not a part of it. This, very briefly, is the body of Freemasonry. The Most Wishful Grand Master, Joseph Earl Perry, will now tell you about its soul.
First, may I extend my greetings to the 6th Lodge of Instruction meeting at this moment in Worcester and the 27th Lodge of Instruction meeting in Fall River. When the rituals of modern speculative Freemasonry were written more than 2 centuries ago, the authors culled the gems of wisdom from the best of all previous schools of religion and philosophy and practical living as transmitted by available history and by internal tradition. Modern Freemasonry may therefore claim to be among the world's oldest laboratories for the practical and experimental research in the mastery of the art of living. The entire ritual is a symbolic representation of the course of a man through his life, leading him step by step from birth through manhood to old age, and leaving him with the hope of immortality. The first degree, called the Entered Apprentice degree, represents man as he comes into life, helpless, ignorant, and dependent, and carries his education through the period of his youth. The second, or Fellowcraft degree, represents man in middle age. And the third, or Master Mason degree, takes him through old age and ends with a beautiful lesson in the unconquerable hope of immortality. Thus, throughout the 3 degrees, the candidate is taught increasing wisdom in the art of upright living. The lodge room itself represents the world in which men live and work, and its oblong shape symbolizes the world as it appeared to the early operative builders, who believed that the world was flat and oblong. Much of the teaching is by symbols. Thus, for at least 500 years before Christ, the Chinese used the square as a symbol of what later became known as the Golden Rule, but which they called the principle of acting on the square. The circle, from time immemorial, has been a symbolic representation of heaven. The compasses by which the circle is drawn have been the symbol of the golden rule as applied to things spiritual. Thus, the square and compasses by which Freemasons are known are two of the oldest known symbols, one signifying the golden rule as applied to things earthly, the other, the golden rule as applied to things spiritual or heavenly. For the past two centuries, Freemasonry has changed but little. Thus, the Freemasonry of George Washington's time was identical in purpose and spirit and methods with the Freemasonry of today. Even its rituals are substantially unchanged. Washington was a man of sound judgment and keen discrimination. He dealt with momentous issues. He had neither time nor desire to engage in trivial or mediocre activities. From necessity and inclination, he gave his allegiance and his strength only to those things which he considered to have outstanding merit. He revered God and all godlike qualities, truth, honor, integrity, justice, human brotherhood. He served his country. He served mankind. He served Freemasonry. He appears to have found in Freemasonry, as have so many millions of others, a connecting link which bound together and gave expression to his love of God and country and mankind. Over and over again, he paid glowing tribute to the intrinsic merit of Freemasonry and its spiritual aid to him. If in a great crisis, a man of Washington's capacity and judgment placed Freemasonry near the top of all human institutions, may we not profitably spend a few moments out of the present crisis to examine into the nature and potentialities of this same institution? What is there in it that attracted not only George Washington and his great counterpart in the Southern Hemisphere, Simon Bolivar, but also attracted Benjamin Franklin and Paul Revere, and no less than 20 out of 51 of the members of the original Constitution Convention, half of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, at least 12 of the presidents of the United States, and in more recent times, nearly all of the royal family in England. King Edward VII was made a Mason by the King of Sweden in 1868, and the present kings of England, Sweden, and Denmark are Masons, as are the heads of several other countries. What is it that has commanded the respect of these men, not as heads of government, but as men, to such a degree that Washington, while commander-in-chief of the army, took his place with the humblest of his brethren in an army lodge presided over by one of his sergeants as worshipful master? And the present King George of England, in common with other members, paid his Masonic obeisance to the village mail carrier, who was the worshipful master of the King's Lodge. What is it that has brought vision and strength and comfort and fellowship to millions of high and low, great and commonplace men as brothers on a plane of Masonic equality? Quite recently, the Grand Lodge of Masons in Massachusetts, by the adoption of a declaration of principles, restated to its members and to any others who may be interested what Freemasonry is, what its purposes are, and how it operates. This declaration is no innovation. It merely restates what has been consistently true for the past two centuries. It is as follows, and I quote, "Freemasonry is a charitable, benevolent, educational, and religious society. Its principles are proclaimed as widely as men will hear. Its only secrets are in its methods of recognition and of symbolic instruction. It is charitable in that it is not organized for profit, and none of its income inures to the benefit of any individual, but all is devoted to the promotion of the welfare and happiness of mankind. It is benevolent in that it teaches and exemplifies altruism as a duty. It is educational in that it teaches by prescribed ceremonials a system of morality and brotherhood based upon the sacred law. It is religious in that it teaches monotheism. The volume of the sacred law is open upon its altars whenever a lodge is in session. Reverence for God is ever present in its ceremonial, and to its brethren are constantly addressed lessons of morality. Yet it is not sectarian or theological. It is a social organization only so far as it furnishes additional inducement that men may foregather in numbers, thereby providing more material for its primary work of education, of worship, and of charity. Through the improvement and strengthening of the character of the individual man, Freemasonry seeks to improve the community. Thus it impresses upon its members the principles of personal righteousness and personal responsibility, enlightens them as to those things which make for human welfare, and inspires them with that feeling of charity or goodwill toward all mankind, which will move them to translate principle and conviction into action. To that end, it teaches and stands for the worship of God, truth and justice, fraternity and philanthropy, and enlightenment and orderly liberty, civil, religious, and intellectual. It charges each of its members to be true and loyal to the government of the country to which he owes allegiance, and to be obedient to the law of any state in which he may be. It believes that the attainment of these objectives is best accomplished by laying a broad basis of principle upon which men of every race, country, sect, and opinion may unite, rather than by setting up a restricted platform upon which only those of certain races, creeds, and opinions can assemble. Believing these things, this Grand Lodge affirms its continued adherence to that ancient and approved rule of Freemasonry, which forbids the discussion in Masonic meetings of creeds, politics, or other topics likely to excite personal animosities. It further affirms its conviction that it is not only contrary to the fundamental principles of Freemasonry, but dangerous to its unity, strength, usefulness, and welfare, for Masonic bodies to take action or attempt to exercise pressure or influence for or against any legislation, or in any way to attempt to procure the election or appointment of governmental officials, or to influence them, whether or not members of the fraternity, in the performance of their official duties. The true Freemason will act in civil life according to his individual judgment and the dictates of his conscience. End of the quotation. Freemasonry never solicits members. No one is ever asked to become a Mason. Anyone who wishes to join must make the first advance and apply for admission, for the fraternity has no interest in a large membership as such, but is interested only in the quality of its members. There are today over 100,000 Masons in Massachusetts, none of whom have been asked to join, but each of whom has voluntarily sought the privilege of membership. Of those who apply, about 1 in 10 is rejected. But acceptance or rejection has no relation to race, creed, wealth, or social standing, for it is the internal and not the external qualifications that recommend a man to be made a Mason. Freemasonry is the friend of every religious faith, but it is not itself a religion. Freemasonry earnestly tries to promote human brotherhood, tolerance, and friendly understanding among all men. Freemasons as individuals are human and weak and imperfect, but Freemasonry as an institution is wise and strong and kindly. Quietly, unselfishly, Freemasonry seeks to make better men, better communities, better nations, a better world. In its every aspect, Freemasonry is reverent. It is not dogmatic or superstitious. Taking the Bible as its rule and guide, it pays rational homage to the supreme architect of the universe. Seeking God often in prayer, it teaches faith and hope. It advocates a life devoted to the highest spiritual aspirations. It suggests a means of approach to that great spiritual reservoir which has ever been able to sustain and inspire those who have successfully established contact with it. Having no quarrel with science or with disbelievers, it still asserts that in an era when mankind is adrift from God, men should turn again in reverence for divine guidance. Thus, in a world of greed and force, Freemasonry teaches self-restraint and reason. In a world permeated with the spirit of selfish rivalry, it teaches universal brotherhood. In a world of intolerance and bigotry, it teaches tolerance and kindness. In a world of cynical disbelief, it teaches reverence for deity. In a world floundering in the depths of a great moral and spiritual depression, it teaches industry and self-reliance and temperance and integrity. Its emphasis is always on the nobler point of view, the finer choice of conduct. In a changing and superficial world, it points to the eternal and fundamental principles that have emerged unchanged from every transition era, even as the eternal mountains emerge from the drifting clouds that temporarily obscure them. It aids and comforts and reassures and inspires individuals. It leaps the barriers of race and space to draw together the finest aspirations of all men and unite them in a universal brotherhood. It asserts the value of wholesome fellowship and of clean pleasure in sustaining the courage, steadying the poise, and easing the tension of life among good friends and brothers. The contribution of Freemasonry to the citizenship of today is that most fundamental of all contributions, namely, the building of individual character and integrity. For the individual characters of its citizens constitute the foundation and the strength and the beauty of any citizenship. The pearls of our civilization are strung on the cord of individual integrity.
You have just heard the fifth in a series of programs in the interest of good citizenship. This series will present representatives of all the fraternal and social organizations. The speakers this evening represented the Grand Lodge of Masons. Copies of these addresses are available by writing to the stations to which you are listening. The speakers on this Good Citizenship program were Joseph Earl Perry, Grand Master of Masons of Massachusetts, and Dr. Frederick Hamilton, former president of Tufts College, now Grand Secretary of the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. Next week at this time, the program will be under the auspices of the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks.